I'm a stubborn woman, and if my slides don't show my pictures, I'm going to replace them with this.
Flash it.
If I can figure out how to work this. Oops. Okay. Let's see. Oh, they came out.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'll start over again. What I'm going to talk about today is based on an article that was written for the American Journal of Nursing, came out in January of this year. And so my first slide is to give a little background to this and the justification for doing it. And like my introduction says, I've been doing research in these areas for quite some time, mostly in terms of measuring staffing and finding ways to look at staffing so that we're measuring it more accurately, but also looking at the relationship with patient outcomes. One area that I had never studied myself directly was staffing in relationship to nursing issues, nursing health, nursing satisfaction, or to the financial outcomes, although that's a deepening interest of mine. So I was approached by Diana Mason, the editor of the American Journal of Nursing, who said, I really want an article that talks about staffing and patient outcomes. We really need this badly. We're forgetting that this is one of the that staffing is one of the most important things for patient safety and quality. And in the meantime, we're doing all this technological stuff. We're, you know, building new hospitals, et cetera, and we're just forgetting about staffing. So that was sort of the motivator of this, was to take us back to looking at some of the basics about what really helps us provide safe care and quality care. The backbone of that is nurses. So as I got into it, I told her, I said, you know, I really don't want to just do its effect on patients, because staffing has such an effect on every aspect of healthcare, of the delivery of healthcare. It has an effect on nurses themselves, and that in turn has an effect on patient care, and that has an effect on the bottom line for hospitals. And one of the emerging topics in my field is how does staffing impact the costs and the outcomes on the financial end? So what this study is a literature review of all of those topics, which made it enormous and took forever, but here it is. So today I'll first talk about conceptual framework, and then we'll get into the evidence on these three areas, and then talk about recommendations at the end. So the definitions that I was working with was, there's multiple definitions for nurse staffing. The most common ones involve staffing nurse positions, RN positions, LPN positions, and I actually count nursing assistants as nurses. I have a very broad category of nurses, which is why I always indicate which type of nurse I'm talking about, because nursing assistants have a role to play too. And so there's how you count the nurses. You can count them by hours or by position. And then usually staffing is looked at as a ratio of that over either number of patients or patient days of care or some other patient denominator. And there's another really important staffing measure that's related to how many RNs there are in relationship to all nurses. And one of the things that I looked at in some papers of mine is how many licensed nurses there are to all nurses. Because one of the really deceptive things about skill mix is, if you only look at the relationship between RNs to all other nurses, and you let go a lot of your LPNs, your skill mix ratio will actually look better, when in fact you've gotten rid of one of your licensed components. So I felt it was very important to also look at licensed nurses over all nurses. And then basically there's a little scientific evidence about the proper ratios of these things, and there's good reason for that. I don't know if we'll ever get to the science of the proper ratios of these things, because so many things fall into place in terms of what is adequate staffing, which I'm going to get to on the next slide, and that's what that last sentence says. So on the next slide, I listed about everything I can think of that is related to workload. And when we talk about staffing, we're really talking about workload. It wouldn't matter if you had one nurse to four patients, one nurse to five patients, so much as what is the acuity of the patient that she's taking care of, what is the unit design that she has. Is it a design where she has to run 20 yards to get from one patient's room to another, or is it a closer unit? Are there centrally located places for her to do her charting, et cetera? The technologies that she's working with, does she have computer charting, if that actually is helping her with some efficiencies and other technologies that might be available? Human resources, as Helen said, if we only worry about RNs and we forget about transport people, we forget about house cleaning people that could come in and help get the room clean, but instead we see the RN doing all this, then she's going to have a much higher workload than if all these resources are still there for her. I can remember the last job I had, they decided in their brilliance that they would get rid of, I worked evening shift, they'd get rid of the person to answer the phone after 6 p.m. Like, nobody wants to find out what's happening with their family members after 6 p.m. And so the RNs were answering the phone in addition to everything else that we had to do. And the amount of administrative tasks that RNs have, these have just been building. I have not seen or heard, I haven't actually been in clinical practice for a few years now, but I have not heard from anybody that the administrative tasks are dropping in any area of healthcare, with the exception of perhaps now in home care, where they're going over to more to computerized charting in home care. But this is still a battle in a lot of healthcare settings. And then again, the skill and education of nurses, and this comes into play because based on the mix of skills and people that you have on the unit and the mix of the education, some mixes might be better than others and might provide better efficiency than others. The one that I skipped when I was going through also is patient throughput, which is an area that I've studied that I strongly feel makes a big difference. Throughput or patient turnover has increased over the past decade or so as a result of a shortening of length of stay, and I'm talking about hospitals again. And all that does is make nursing care sort of like Grand Central Station, and they're moving them in, moving them out. And again, on an evening shift that I worked, I'd get in, I'd have six or seven patients, I'd discharge two or three, and I'd admit two or three every night. Did I have six on the record? It would look like I had six or seven patients, but in reality, I had nine or ten. So it makes a big difference in workload. And this is a theoretical framework for the various impacts that I alluded to. The first box just shows that, yes, if we have inadequate staffing, however we define that, or excessive workload, it can give rise to difficult working conditions, which again we've talked about already. There are other things that can give rise to that. It's not just staffing that comes into play. It's other organizational climate and work issues, management. Are you rewarded for the work you do, etc. And there are the nursing skills and characteristics. We don't want to deny the fact that nurses bring into the equation their own issues, positive and negative, that come into this mix. But you throw all these into the pot, and what you can get in today's climate is with the problems with workload and staffing is difficult working conditions, and then that impacts nursing performance. Our problem in research is that box, that second box that a lot of arrows are pointing to there, that is a black box in terms of evidence. It is the hardest thing to study. You literally have to go in and do an observational study, or you can maybe do surveys, but we don't have that objective kind of information about how does the work environment affect how I take care of a patient, how does it affect the number of mistakes I might make, how does it affect medication errors. There's starting to be some studies, but there are very, very few. So we then jump to the last two columns of boxes, which are the impacts, which are easier to see because we have administrative data on patient outcomes. We have a lot of nursing surveys on how they feel about their work environment or how they feel about nursing. And we have objective evidence about financial incomes. We have financial statements. We have how much profits hospitals make. We have their costs, et cetera. So we do have some data on that. So a lot of times when we do research, we go from the first box to the last two, and we skip the one in the middle. And that's why that's what this study did, this literature review. With patient outcomes, the ones that have been researched are, there's some on dissatisfaction, a lot of studies on adverse events, and an adverse event is when a patient goes into the hospital and they have a complication that was not due to their own constitution going in. So it's something that happened that happened while they're in the hospital that was due to the care that they got. An adverse event does not necessarily mean that a mistake was made, but it does mean that it was not the patient's fault at all. An adverse event that would not have been caused by medical error would be one in which, say, for example, you gave a medication, it was the right dose, it was the right patient, it was the right time, it was the right route, but for some reason this patient reacted badly to that medication. So that would not be considered an error. So a lot of our adverse event studies can't distinguish between the two, but we still see, even though we do that, we still see there's a connection with staffing, because a lot of the adverse events are errors and are not just due to some patient reaction to what we did to them. You do see that patient characteristics plays into patient outcomes, because they're due to the patient's severity, their age, or some other factor, they might be more predisposed to having some kind of adverse event. Now, you'll see two-way arrows between patient outcomes and nursing outcomes. And the reason for that is that in a lot of the literature, nurses say that when they are unhappy about their work, that when they feel like they can't take good care to patients, and when they feel like they're giving unsafe care, it affects their own dissatisfaction. And vice versa, it's theorized that if nurses are unhappy, they're very likely not to be able to give as good a care as if they were happy. And then finally we get to the last column, and the theoretical framework there is that a lot of the patient outcomes that occur, the negative outcomes and the negative nursing outcomes, then turn into financial problems. From the workforce issues, the nursing outcomes, we have possibly lower productivity. We have a lot of turnover costs. We have costs because we have to use agency nurses because of a nursing shortage. We don't have enough nurses, and nobody wants to work in nursing. We have absenteeism costs. Nurses call in sick rather than having scheduled days off because they just can't take going into work that day. We have workers' compensation claims because they stuck themselves with a needle because they were rushing, or they were rushing to turn a patient and they had a musculoskeletal injury. Our unnecessary patient care costs are longer lengths of stay because there were complications, or just because the patient just didn't quite make it through the system as well. Higher treatment costs, maybe we had to go in and x-ray a patient that fell because there wasn't enough nursing staff to watch them. Malpractice claims due to some problems. And then there also could be lower patient care revenue. Sometimes this isn't thought about, but when you have ER backups, you can't admit a patient, you have to bypass to another hospital. Whoops, there went some patient revenue. Why did you have the ER backups? Didn't have enough staff. And bed closures because you don't have enough nursing staff. And then loss of market share because you're getting a bad reputation as a hospital. So there's a lot of financial reasons to keep your staffing good, at least theoretically. I haven't even gotten to the evidence yet, and I know I'm running. How much time do we have?
You have about 7 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to run. This is just repeating what I just talked about. This is what I did in the literature review, very comprehensive. I used several article databases from 1980 to 2006, a bunch of multiple search terms. And then the articles that I selected were all original empirical literature, but I did look at any reviews that existed on those topics. And these are some summary tables of what I found in the studies. NS means non-significant, so that study didn't find a significant relationship. Negative in at least these set of tables on patient outcomes means that if there were higher RN or LPN to patient or patient day or adjusted patient days of care levels, then there were fewer complications. So the negative mean is good in this sense. So if we take, I don't know if cardiac arrest shock was in there. I know there were some studies that had that, but they didn't make it in there for some reason. Complications, we have two that did show that there is a important relationship between important and relationship that we want to see between staffing and this patient adverse event. Falls, three negative, one non-significant, and then we've got other staffing variables as we go into the other columns. Failure to rescue is a very important variable that means that if the patient had an adverse event or had some incident when they were in the hospital that really was life-threatening, were the staff able to keep them alive afterwards? And if they weren't, they failed to rescue. And Linda Aiken is one author, and Linda Aiken and colleagues are one group of people that did one really important study on failure to rescue. There have been three studies that show the negative relationship with the first staffing variable, one with the second and one with the third. So that's a very, very kind of consistent finding. Only one had a non-significant relationship and one had a positive. We have more adverse events. Medication errors, we're starting to have some findings. And oh, by the way, these were just from 2002 to 2006 because there were so many studies. There have been over 45 studies in the U.S. alone and 20 internationally on staffing and patient outcomes. You would think we have enough evidence by now to really go out there and say, but as I'll show later, we still could do some more. Mortality is one that's pretty consistent also, showing negative, less mortality with better staffing. Pneumonia tends to show better staffing, lower pneumonia with better staffing. And those are some of the most important ones. Pulmonary compromise is more inconsistent. Restraint use, which is done in nursing home research a lot. And again, there's also a few studies looking at staffing in nursing homes, and I did not include this in the study. Skin breakdown is kind of inconsistent, and urinary tract infections are also, which I don't completely understand because those two should be very nursing specific. What it may mean is that we need to look at other nursing staff because anymore the nursing staff that do a lot of the observation and care that would involve skin breakdown would be LPNs and nursing assistants. So it may be what element of nursing we're looking at that why we're not finding more significant stats. Several reviews, I'm not going to go through all of them. The most significant one was just done in 2007, and it was large. It looked at studies from 1990 to 2006. Their summary of the studies were that they could only sort of safely say that higher nurse staffing is related to lower patient mortality and failure to rescue. Another study said they thought it also was related to pneumonia. Oh, no, I think that's me. That's mine. My summary. Most studies and the other thing I wanted to talk about this area of research is that most of us look at more than one adverse event. So by golly, it's sort of the shotgun approach. We're going to find at least one significant relationship between staffing and the adverse outcome if we do that. So that's one of the problems. Even though we all look at more than one, we pass each other in the night. And whereas I may find that it's significantly related to pneumonia, Linda Aiken doesn't. So what we have to do, the remaining research that needs to be done in this on staffing and patient outcomes, is to get more consistency. There's other, but I got to move on. So what I did from just counting them, and this is not the best way to do it, you really need to look at all the methodologies, but just kind of counting the number of significant findings, I saw falls, failure to rescue, mortality, and pneumonia as being the adverse events that are more we can relate more to staffing. Moving right into the nursing outcomes, I have 1 minute. there's a lot of nursing outcomes, and I'll summarize this literature. It's pretty consistent that the understaffing, high workload, high job demand, stress, let's see what else, I think that's the only three, relate to all of these unsatisfactory feelings that nurses have, and also the physical problems, musculoskeletal industry, even assaults can be related to staffing, I suppose because they're not being nice enough or whatever. Also relates to turnover, which is important in the financial section that I'm gonna skip through these here. Retention, related to retention, finances. Four different ways to look at the finances. One is just looking at the costs. You can look at employee costs, or you can look at personnel costs or operating costs. Those often turn out not so good because, you know, if you add more RNs, you're likely to have higher costs. I don't have time to talk about it. Maybe we can talk about it in our discussion afterwards, but there is a way to find positive efficiencies in that area, but it's a long story. You can have cost savings related to reduced length of stay, which is related to cost savings related to reduced patient adverse events, because usually if the patient has an adverse event, it's lengthened their length of stay. But there's two things that happen with an adverse event. You've lengthened the length of stay. You've also increased a lot of your costs for tests and equipment and treatment. So you have you've increased your operating costs and you've lengthened the length of stay when you have a patient adverse event. And then there's costs related to reduced nursing turnover, which Cheryl Jones has done a series of studies that she updates every few years about the cost of turnover, and I think those are some of the best studies out there on turnover. And I'm just going to go through these real quick. I want to get to the most interesting thing. What we really need to do when we look at staffing in relationship to financial outcomes is have a cost-benefit analysis. We need to be able to find the net cost or the net benefit of staffing, which means that we need to know how much it costs to add certain types of nurses and what are our cost savings by doing that and subtract the cost from the cost savings. Most studies do not do that. There's only a couple, and that's what I wanted to get to. Rothenberg found that decreasing patients per nurse or increasing the nurse per patient ratio lowers mortality and decreases costs, but the cost savings are never completely offset from the labor costs. We need to do more work in that area. They did find that also that the cost effectiveness declines as the patient to nurse ratio declines. But they found that, and this goes back to why Diana Mason wanted me to do this study, that nevertheless, this was more cost effective than other patient safety interventions, and I can't remember what those are now, but it's in terms of my recommendations, which maybe we can talk about in discussion afterwards. One thing we need to think about is the trade-off between doing this or adding nurses. And maybe adding nurses will be better and more cost-effective than doing something like building a new building, making private rooms, et cetera. And then Needleman is the other study that really did a cost-benefit analysis. And he found that if you raise the proportion of RNs without changing licensed hours, that you would result in a small average net benefit, a negative net cost. And I'll end there because I'm over, and we'll talk about recommendations later, hopefully.
Well, thank you. That's a lot to take in. Unfortunately, Ann Converso couldn't make it with us today. She had a family emergency. Ann is the president of United American Nurses. But Pamela Wilson has agreed to step in and do her presentation. Pamela is the assistant to the president for the Department of Professional Employees, which is a consortium of 24 AFL-CIO unions representing professional and technical employees. So please welcome Pamela Wilson.
But So I'm just going to read Anne's remarks as though I were Anne. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to speak to you about what is without doubt the top issue facing RNs, unsafe RN staffing, and the dangerous effect that has on patient care and on a nursing shortage that is not improving. I've been a union member for about 30 years, so the lens through which I've come to view and try to solve any workplace problem for me or the nurses I represent is collective action. I believe in it, I've seen it work, and I think nothing lasting is accomplished without it. Many RNs are making real headway in their individual bargaining units in addressing unsafe staffing through their unions, by passing contract language that mandates minimum RN to patient ratios that involves staff nurses in the decision making of whether more patients can safely be admitted to a unit and attaches real penalties to hospitals which violate these provisions. RNs in states have mobilized around the nurse staffing issue, resulting in the passage of groundbreaking legislation in California, as we'll hear about in a moment, and building momentum in other states from Michigan to Minnesota to New York, where I live, and beyond. For the first time, RNs also are now coming together in a national way across hospitals, across states, and across unions to act collectively, just as we do in our bargaining units, to force national movement on this critical issue. And that's what I'd like to talk to you about today. Nurses around the country have known for years what study after study is bearing out. When there are not enough nurses, patient care suffers, medical errors increase, hospital-acquired infections increase, respiratory failure is more common, patients stay in hospitals longer. And nurses who are being asked to do more with less are leaving the bedside for less demanding jobs. Access to quality, affordable health care is the most pressing issue facing American families today, but an accessible health care system is worthless if there are not enough nurses to staff it. The Bureau of Labor Statistics estimate that we'll need 1.1 million nurses by 2012. Nearly 500,000 nurses have left the profession already, and a 2003 survey that found that 3 out of 5 nurses have thought of quitting patient care. And this is from Peter Hart and Associates. At my union, like others, we knew the statistics on unsafe staffing, but we wanted to hear more from our individual staff nurses about the real crisis nurses were facing on a daily basis across the country. From November 2007 till April 2008, United American Nurses conducted a small, brief survey on our website and in our newsletter that asked nurses to tell us, in 10 short questions and in their own words, what staffing was like in their facility. The more than 1,500 nurses who responded to the questionnaire painted a very vivid picture. 13% of respondents said that in the unit where they worked, safe staffing ratios were exceeded all or nearly all the time. 30% said they were exceeded more than half the time. 9% said that in the unit where they worked, patients have sustained preventable harm due to unsafe staffing ratios at least once a week. 3% said this happened every day, and 27% said this happened once a month. In their own words, a nurse from Minnesota said that her biggest concern about unsafe staffing is that, quote, "I will kill a patient by my neglect, fatigue, or error. When I have too many tasks to do and not enough time to do them, I prioritize. I do the tasks, but do not give the patient the nursing care they need." A nurse in Michigan said, quote, "It has become an assembly line meat factory. One shift, the other RN had 9 ventilators plus 5 patients in the emergency department. The administrators wouldn't close the ED." A nurse from New York said, "I fear going to work every day. I fear that I'll make an error that will hurt a patient or cause me to lose my license. As unsafe RN staffing has reached these crisis proportions, we've come to recognize that it will take a federal law to make sure that safe minimum RN to patient ratios are the norm in every hospital. Federal legislation is something that no one nursing group or union is going to win alone. It will take concerted mobilization by all of us, and that's why RNs Working Together was created. RNs Working Together is the name of the RN-only industry coordinating committee that was created within the AFL-CIO in February 2006 to allow the leaders of AFL-CIO unions representing registered nurses to come together to coordinate legislative activities, education, bargaining, and other efforts. As a founding member of this coalition, UAN believed it was critical to have a place where our unions and leaders could build working relationships, determine the priorities we could collectively pursue, and collaborate on reaching those goals. While we're all proud of our individual unions, I think there's a recognition that there is power to be gained by coming together around issues like nurse staffing. More than 2 years after its founding, RNs Working Together includes 10 AFL-CIO unions representing more than 200,000 working registered nurses nationwide. We're the largest organization of working staff nurses in the U.S. I emphasize here the words staff nurse because there are certainly other organizations which represent nurse executives, nurse managers, educators, and academic nurses. What distinguishes RNs Working Together is our mission to unify the power of nurses at the bedside to achieve our common goals and our vision to be the voice of direct care RNs. We advocate for our members who are nurses at the bedside caring for patients. Which brings us back to the RN safe staffing issue. RNs Working Together has been vocal on a number of issues important to staff nurses, but one of the coalition's top priorities has been to mobilize support for the passage of HR 2123, a real safe RN staffing bill. HR 2123 is distinct from other variations of staffing bills on Capitol Hill in that it mandates minimum RN to patient ratios and it establishes penalties for facilities that don't follow them. It doesn't rely on committees, panels, or study groups to come up with a solution in partnership with management. Staff nurses have seen those solutions before, and we are unfortunately living with the results of them. Over the past year, RNs Working Together has been a leading voice for safe staffing legislation on Capitol Hill, working with Representative Jan Schakowsky and her staff to educate legislators on why this legislation is critical. In July, the coalition held a congressional briefing for staff on the Hill that featured remarks from many of the nurse leaders of RNs Working Together, along with author Suzanne Gordon, who has written about the staffing crisis, and Representative Schakowsky's chief of staff. These were the elected leaders and spokespeople for nurses at the bedside, bringing to legislators a sense of what it's like to be assigned a fifth patient to care for when you know you can only safely care for four or three. As a result of our efforts and work by our respective unions, we now have 56 co-sponsors. As we look toward the outcome of the elections next week, we're hopeful to build on that list and obtain a co-sponsor in the Senate. I want to tell you about some other RNs Working Together activity. As we look at measures that will improve RN staffing, RNs Working Together has also focused on other measures which directly impact the working conditions of staff nurses in hospitals, and therefore whether nurses will stay at the bedside, including legislation to ban mandatory overtime. No nurse should have to work past the point in a shift where she feels, in her judgment, that she can no longer safely perform her nursing duties. This directly contributes to nurse burnout, and it's a threat not only to a nurse's license, but also, of course, to patient safety. than safe patient lifting legislation. Too few hospitals have moved to address the dangerous musculoskeletal disorders nurses face every day from lifting heavy patients in equipment. While viable alternatives exist through safe lifting equipment, if we're to keep nurses at the bedside, we must also address this critical health and safety issue. We're fighting legislation that would increase the limit on foreign educated nurse visas, which we believe is a misguided effort to address the nursing shortage that does nothing to fix the poor working conditions in the US that have led to a staffing crisis, while robbing other countries of their desperately needed healthcare professionals. Legislation to protect collective bargaining in the VA system. The VA has been gradually tightening the restrictions on what workers in the Veterans Affairs system can bargain over, and that's resulted in a significant threat to the union rights of nurses and other workers in the VA system. As nurses, our ability to advocate for our patients is protected and upheld by our unions. If we're to keep VA nurses at the bedside and make the VA a competitive place for nurses to work, we must address that threat. So in conclusion, lessons learned. We know that if we're to realize our goal of turning around the nurse staffing crisis and bringing nurses back to the bedside, it must come through collective action. We understand that this process doesn't happen overnight, but we believe it will take each of our unions working toward this common goal for us to be successful. We believe that RNs working together is a great foundation to bring all staff nurses together to push for safe levels of nurse staffing in every facility. Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela, for stepping in at the last minute and helping us out. And last but certainly not least, we have with us Hetty Dumple. She is a registered nurse and an attorney. She is the National Chief Director of Nursing Practice and Patient Advocacy for the California Nurses Association National Nurses Organizing Committee. She sees her role as promoting and protecting the vital role that registered nurses play in the healthcare or play in healthcare as direct caregivers and patient advocates. Hetty has worked at CNA for more than 20 years in a variety of capacities and arenas. She joined as CNA's executive branch lobbyist, directed the collective bargaining program of CNA, and now serves as the national chief director. In 2000, her focus expanded to include the national and international arenas when critical requests were made by RNs to roll out the safe staffing ratios that CNA sponsored in California. And I might add, California is the only state that has those legislated. Today, she is instrumental in building a powerful national social advocacy movement of direct care RNs to achieve a single-payer, single-standard-of-care healthcare system and build a national union. To that end, she drafted patient advocacy, RN protection, and safe staffing ratios legislation for numerous key states, including a similar hospital patient protection initiative at the national level. Please welcome Hetty Dumple. Thank you.